Well, so then we went out and boycotted. Let us boycott. That was in October 1970. Started another boycott. Well, that had been going, I don't know, a couple of months, and we got together with the big honchos back in national office, the NFL-CIO, had got word from the Teamsters. The Teamsters wanted to have a moratorium so that they'd give them time to go around and get all those contracts rescinded, which Grammy had already promised to do and hadn't done. So they came out and met with us down in Fresno, one of the motels down there, and the union agreed on the moratorium. Well, it was mainly in order to keep peace in the family that Caesar agreed on the moratorium, because the AFL-CIO might not have gone along with us if we had continued the boycott at that point, because they were so sure, they said, that the Teamsters were going to keep their word this time. Well, they didn't, of course. It was probably a big hoax, another big hoax, in order to slow down the whole thing and completely slow down the momentum of the boycott. And fortunately, we were able to get it started up again, but not, you see, that the moratorium was only supposed to last, I don't know, something like 90 days. Something like 90 days, and dragged on for a number of months. I've forgotten how many.
6 months.
And then they had to start it up all over again. And
well, the last boycott, what were we doing no good before the moratorium? Just brought around the main boycott.
Right.
That's right. We had a European operation.
Yeah,
Vivian Levine was over there.
Yeah.
Europe going around. And yeah, we did. And as a matter of fact, that even though we were never able to quite recover from our momentum that we had generated, because we had to go back into the grapes, you know. And then we had two things that were boycotting, and then finally the third thing, dollar. So even though we weren't ever able to get back all that momentum that we had at one time, we had enough of it over enough years so that a hell of a lot of people throughout the country quit eating that lettuce. And it showed up, you know, in that recent article that came out in, in the growers, in the Packer, yeah, where they actually admit the growers. Well, you all saw the article where the lettuce growers have admitted that the boycott has hurt them.
So when the lettuce boycott first started, Teamsters were supposed to be rescinding their contracts.
The Teamsters were supposed to be getting together with the growers to work out an arrangement for rescinding the contracts. But they didn't. So that was just another broken agreement.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Well, during this time, this, by the way, is the third part of the House meeting outline that we're in now. The third part of the House meeting outline begins with the lettuce strike and boycott. Well, and it also includes the next point I'm going into now, which is the grower attempts to sabotage, grower attempts to destroy the union. Okay, the first thing that they did.
You forgot one point of it.
Huh?
When Caesar landed in jail, but Bud Engel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't mention that. That, I might mention that before we get into this next thing. There was one company over there that had an ancient contract with the Teamsters, and that was Bud Engel. Bud Engel was, I guess, the second largest lettuce grower in the United States. Inter Harvest is the largest. We still have that contract. We have. So naturally, Bud Engel, having had this long history of relationship with the Teamsters, didn't think it was fair for us to be striking and boycotting them. See, they felt that they had a position of privilege because theirs went back a long ways. Well, we didn't figure that way. And the other, naturally, the workers in the other ranches wanted everybody to come out. So we struck them too, and they got very uptight about that, and they went to the judge there and got a special injunction against the boycott. We weren't even supposed to say don't buy Bud Endel lettuce and so forth, but under the terms of that injunction. And so later, Caesar had to appear. So we did anyway. We violated the injunction. Caesar appeared in court, and he was put in jail because the union had done this. And so the last thing he said as he left the courtroom, he wasn't supposed to say anything under the law about Bud Endel. He said, "Boycott the hell out of him," and then he went to jail. And so he was in jail for about 23 or 4 days, wasn't he?
Twenty days.
And came
out before Christmas.
Yeah, came out before Christmas, and they set up a shrine across the street from the jail there in Salinas, and of the Virgin Shrine, shrine for the Virgin of Guadalupe, and they had candles going all the time, and groups of people coming, and Ethel Kennedy came out there, and various celebrities, and finally, just before Christmas, why they let him out of jail. Actually, it was a terrific thing for the great boycott, because it called national attention. Here was Caesar Chavez in jail, the dumbest thing they could have done, you know. Got so many more hundreds of thousands of people not to eat lettuce, didn't they? Soon they found out that they put him in jail for boycotting. So, did
you mention, I don't remember, did you mention anything on the fast that Caesar had? And it went up to 68.
Oh, God, yes. Forgot about the fast. Okay, before we get home. Yeah, how could we forget the fast? Before we get into how the growers tried to destroy the union, and we'll get back to the fast, which began in February of 1968. What happened was that a lot of time had gone by, and people had been working very hard to try and get contracts from the Gateway growers, and they just felt that they weren't making enough headway fast enough. And so some of them were beginning to talk about violence. And I think some here and there were some clods thrown. And that was about the extent of any violence that I heard about. But Caesar began to get very worried for fear that the thing might break loose. And when something like that begins, you never know where it's going to end. And he had an old fear that someday they'd put the strike into jail. In other words, they just arrest all the leadership and everybody else and just put it in jail and then strike. And plus the fact that he, as he said many times, he doesn't think it's worth the life of one person. So the talk went on, even though he tried to discourage it. And he got rumors that various people were making threats of doing this and such of doing that. So one night at a meeting at the Filipino Hall, he made the announcement that he was going to go on a fast against violence, and that he was going to go out to the 40 acres and make his stand, his nonviolent stand at the 40 acres, to stay there. So he got up out of the meeting and walked out to the 40 acres. Day, I think it was Nick Jones and Virginia's wife, they got a tent. He went out and stayed in a little room there in the 40 acres right next to the breezeway in that service station thing. And Nick Jones and Virginia got a tent and they went out there and that encouraged workers, pretty soon all kinds of workers. Pretty soon the whole 40 acres was full of tents from workers all over California coming down there to the room. And he was spending all day long talking to the workers. There were lines of workers sitting there waiting for him to get their chance to go in and talk to him. And well, you've read about how fact, came down from, I think it was up around Madera, or further north than you said, I think it was. He came down with tacos, and he'd had a few drinks. And his people up there had decided that Caesar had to be fed. He had to be force-fed, because they weren't going to take a chance on his dying. So he brought the tacos down there, and he went in to see Caesar, and at one point he just jumped on top of him and tried to force the food out of Caesar's mouth. And of course, you know, the people outside heard the trouble going on, so they came in and started to do some damage to this guy, and Caesar called him off. One time, Manuel, somebody knocked on the door. Here Caesar's on the fast, you know, and Manuel's inside with Caesar. And Manuel said, hey, just a minute, Caesar's just finishing his lunch in here. That sound like Manuel? Hey, just a minute, he's just finishing lunch. Every night they had a, well, it wasn't any, you know, great period of rejoicing. Because everybody was very, very worried. You know, that never happened before. At least in public fast, he'd have a short fast that hardly anybody knew about except Elena, just to drive her up the walls. But he was getting to look pretty bad. And they used to have mass out there every night. And people would come from all over to attend the mass, and they'd have a candlelight ceremony. They'd walk around the 40 acres with candles. And people would bring little gifts and pictures and other little, you know, mementos, things that they'd gotten in Mexico, pictures of virgins or of saints and whatnot. And they'd pin them up on the wall there. And the Filipino women painted the windows, sort of like, you know, those windows they have in church, the aluminum, what do you call them?
Stained
glass. Only, of course, it was just a very common pattern that they put on all the windows. And Caesar would come to the mass every night. Well, as the days went by and days went by, he just had a harder time than ever coming. Became more and more difficult for him to get out of bed but what was happening was he was organizing all the time. Of course, he talked to more people during the mass than he had since he started way back there in 1962, because the people were just there day in and day out. Lines of people just going to talk to him. Not only that, but Dolores and I had been we were back in New York at the time, we were trying to get publicity, you know, about the boycott. We couldn't get a line. The labor was having a big strike, and the head of the Central Labor Council wouldn't see us. Couldn't get his attention. Van Arsdale back there. So Dolores finally just stayed outside the door where they were negotiating. And when he came out, she rushed up and grabbed his lapels and made him stop and listen to her. But we couldn't. Nobody paid attention until Caesar went on his fast. All of a sudden, we're getting all kinds of publicity back in New York about Caesar's fast out here. And from that time on, we got publicity. But up until then, they weren't paying attention to us.
Well,
when something spectacular happened, they didn't think that the arrival of Tiffany Farmer was much news. It had to be something like a fast that maybe betokened somebody's death, you know, before they then that was news.
Fred,
didn't
the
68
fast come out of the heat of some kind of court action in Bakersfield?
Yeah, now that came next.
Yeah, that was all about it.
Well, wasn't that
Camacho and Caesar?
Huh?
That was charged with bringing against Camacho and Caesar
for violence. Yeah. Right. Well, and what had he done? Was that when he was throwing the clods around and so forth?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not well familiar.
Anyway,
they brought the charges against Caesar because they wanted Caesar to be locked up. That's what they were looking for. And Camacho was another, you know. much, it's not very popular.
But at any rate, they got workers from all over California. Marshall organized that one. Got workers from all of our wine grape contracts and many others that they get their hands on to come down to Delano. And I think about 2,000 of them. There were about 2,000 of them that converged on the courthouse in Bakersfield, and they were absolutely silent. They're kneeling on the sidewalks and all up the stairs, going clear into the courtrooms and so forth. They were all these silent thousands of farm workers. and Caesar and Comanche walked through, and the growers that were at the level of the charge. Who were the growers that did that? Jamar was one.
Jamar was one,
right.
See, and what happened at the first day for which they postponed the trial against Caesar because they said
he was too sick.
Too sick.
Yeah.
So they come and see, they wanted them to come next day. And by having come the next day, a lot of people wouldn't show up, you know. That's what they were thinking. A lot of people would not show up, you know, because, you know, in the wintertime, I mean, you have to work. And it was foggy. It was really pretty bad, you know. Finally, the next day, they doubled the people, you know, that were the day before.
Yeah.
So finally, they postponed it for another 2 or 3 months, you know. And then because they said that they find Caesar guilty, I mean, that he was too weak, I mean, to give a sentence, you know. Finally, they dropped the charge against him and the death of Camacho.
But it certainly underlined the attitude of the union, the whole philosophy, the nonviolent philosophy of the union. And as I say, it probably prevented, it might, we don't know, probably prevented violence. Because this was the whole, they tried and tried and tried to get him to go off the fast. They promised and swore up and down on the grave of their mothers that there'd never be any violence and so forth. And he still wouldn't start eating. They got his mother and father down to Delano and they pled with him and so forth, and he still wouldn't quit. Until finally the doctor found out that he'd done damage to his kidneys already. And so then that was the first fast. Of course, he had another brief fast over there in Salinas. That the last.
But you didn't mention. I mean, when he breaks his fast, I mean, how many people there that was headed to Kennedy?
Oh, right. Yeah, when they broke the fast, I think it was the 23rd day or whatever. They had about 10,000 people out in what's the name of that park on the outskirts of Delano?
Memorial.
Royal Park, and Bobby Kennedy came up that morning and talked to Caesar, and then they went out, and Chris Hartmeyer and a lot of nuns and priests and ministers were there, and they passed this bread around to everybody, all those 10,000 people, and they all took the bread at the same time that Kennedy fed Caesar his first mouthful of food, 23 days. And according to Kennedy, that was the time that he decided to run at that point.
I remember that day when Sister Reyes and Karina were there, and Sister split, you know, and Reyes and Karina was on a bobtail truck, you know, on top, and he was making a speech here, and my sister, you know, having a fast, you know, because But you know, just really say, really contradicting the whole thing of it, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Tenemos que dar la madre. He really impressed a lot of people, you know, because
yeah.
They all kind of people out there.
Okay, getting back to where we were on the growers' attempts to destroy the union. But no sooner were those contracts signed, of course, in 1970, than the growers were making plans for getting out from under. And it's pretty clear that they were instrumental in that Salinas lettuce strike situation as the first big blow against the union standing up with the Teamsters. But then they decided the next thing was to get legislation passed in quite a number of states throughout the country to sort of defang the union, to take away the power of the union, to eliminate the secondary boycott and the strike at harvest time and so forth. And they tried to get the California legislature, Sacramento, to pass it, and the one in Washington, and one in Oregon. And the union organized in each of those states and was able to get enough votes in the legislature to defeat the grower legislation. And they also won in Florida. Eliseo was in charge of the political campaign in Florida, and they descended, they just went all over Florida getting workers to write letters to the legislature and so forth. And they didn't do the job down there and defeated that legislation down there in Florida, which was really something, because that's a pretty rough state to do that. So, however, we lost the fight over in Arizona. In Idaho, yeah.
Wouldn't it pass by?
Probably. In places where.
Two places.
Yeah.
Where Arizona was Idaho and Kansas.
Yeah. But, of course, those other two states were, quite such a loss. But Arizona was because of the presence of, there's a great deal more in the way of row crops and lettuce and grapes and so forth over there than there is in those other states. And so we went, and in order to teach to teach various states a lesson, as you know, Caesar went on his second fast over there. And those of you that have seen the film Si Se Puede know all about that. And then they went on a big voter registration drive to recall and a petition drive to recall the governor over there who signed that bill. And by one strategy or another, they were able to declare a lot of the people who registered and eligible to vote. And so they got the whole thing all filed up. And by that time, a whole year had gone by. But we had to re-register an awful lot of people that we shouldn't have had to re-register. But because of the registration job that was done over there, all of them were lost, even though we didn't get the governor recalled at that time. The next governor to go in over there was a Mexican-American by the name of Castro. Not that he's all that good, but he certainly is an awful lot better than Williams that was in there. And he's making noises, at least, like he's trying to help us to get together with the growers over there in the lemon strike. Not only that, but we got a number of other, because of the large Chicano vote that were registered by the people over there, a number more Chicanos were elected to the state legislature over there, who most of them are, I think all of them are sympathetic. So it wasn't complete waste of time to do that. And just the fact that we did put up that kind of a fight, I think sort of will pay off in the future.
We got a lot of good organizers from there too.
That's true, right.
Was the legislation appealed?
No. In fact, however, they are not enforcing it in connection with the lettuce strike, lemon strike over there. They'd rather not, I think they just rather not have it, and then maybe they're afraid that we'll take it on up and try and
they
get it.
They have never enforced that law.
Never have.
They have, we had a great boycott, great strike this year, a great strike the year before, and they never enforced that.
Once they, I think once they implement that law, once a strike starts, they have to enforce it. But if you want to go get a grower to the
You think they're afraid that we'll take it on up to the Supreme Court and get the whole, it's already there?
January 13th, it was supposed to be heard by a three-court panel.
It hasn't been decided.
It wasn't decided yet. On January 13th, I know it was three-court, it was supposed to be heard. I don't know if it had been a decision or not.
The Supreme Court, or?
It's appeals court.
Oh, Circuit Court of Appeals.
Three people were going to sit in on it.
Okay.
One thing about that, I think the organizing that just went on over there during that recall campaign is one reason why it was very easy this year to oust the Teamsters when the Teamsters tried to organize under that law. It was very easy to stir the people up again. When he had one election, they got beat so bad that it was so easy to get the people going just from that whole thing. People were ready to fight in this state.
Yeah. It's never worked before.
Did they cancel those other elections?
Yeah. I mean, just people were just thousands of people in the state willing to help them.
Okay, so they lost out, the growers lost out in their fight at the legislative level in the key states, except for Arizona. And so then they resorted to the initiative and referendum and they started passing petitions all throughout California for Proposition 22, which later became Proposition 22 after it qualified for the ballot. Well, you know what happened there. The union organized all over the state. Leroy Chatfield was in charge of the operation. And we were able to to defeat that legislation in the election that followed, both in the North, Bay Area, and in Southern California, where it was harder. Of course, we up there in the Bay Area, you know, it was not all that hard because there was a lot of labor support and so forth. But we defeated up there nearly 2-1.
I think about
60-40.
You guys in Orange County,
we were already down.
What?
We killed in Orange County.
Oh yeah, we did. Yeah. Right. That was the big surprise.
Yeah, that was the big upset. That's what did it.
Yeah.
Fred, what about SB40? Remember we had to go to Sacramento also on that?
Right?
On SB40 we had to go to Sacramento on that. Wasn't that before Proposition 22?
Yeah, well I said that we defeated the legislation in California in Sacramento, right. I didn't mention the name of the bill here. We did the same thing in Washington, Oregon. So, so those were the attempts that the growers made in the political level, legislative level. But that wasn't all that they did, as I mentioned before, and as you guys that have been working with the growers know, they began to sabotage the contracts in turn. What it really boiled down to was attempts to turn the workers against the union. They had an excellent opportunity to do this because the workers had really never been organized in grades, at least. And we had the contracts okay, but as I told you before, the workers themselves weren't organized. And so some of the growers, probably the majority of them, would pull the same kind of shenanigans. They would order many more workers than they really needed. So the hiring hall would send them out there. Say the guy wanted to order 300 workers, and the hiring hall sent out 300. Well, actually, he only wanted 200. So they saw. He said, "Those guys know what they're doing. Well, they send me 300. You guys, why don't need you guys? The union doesn't know what they're doing back there. They better get straightened out and so forth and turn the workers against the union, you know, have waste all that time going out to the field and then getting turned down for a job." And they did the same thing with the Kennedy plan. According to the Kennedy plan, you know, they had to have worked so many hours, I think it was 70 hours, in order to be eligible for the Kennedy plan?
50.
50? Okay. And they wouldn't send the Kennedy plan got the number of hours from each grower, for each worker. And the growers wouldn't send in the proper number of hours. So one of the workers would get sick, went to the Kennedy plan people said, oh, you haven't got enough hours. What do you mean we haven't got, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we've been working out there for months and so forth. Well, there's something wrong. And so then they get mad at the union again for turning them down. Well, actually, they turned down. They just didn't get the immediate service that they would have if the growers had, you know, played it straight. So any number of little things like this to keep the workers riled up against the union.
The other thing also, Fred, is that when the workers signed the authorization, so 350 would be deducted, you know, out of their check, you know, or 1050, you know, and then you wouldn't deduct anymore, you know, until, you know, 3 months after. And the grower would just keep deducting from their check, you know, from the payroll check, you know, 1050 every week. You know, that really make the workers angry. And this is in Italy, but the workers really get angry. Anyone could get angry, you know, and they deduct them 1050, you know, every week. So the guys are paying to the office, you know, and just mad.
Instead of paying when they should have?
Yeah, they always say they didn't have to deduct the dues every week instead of once a month. That's it. Then they wait. A month came up, then they'd send the money.
I see.
And the workers wanted to work some money. I could have just paid. Sometimes they wouldn't.
Everything to screw up the whole operation.
Then when workers would pay, I mean, the union dues for 2 years and 3 months.
I think one of the worst things they did was that when a worker would go to the grower and say, I need a job, and the grower would say, I'll give you a job, the union. You go to the union, the union won't send you out. That was the worst thing you probably did to us right there, is that telling the worker that you can have the job.
Well, the former would do the same thing.
But when you go in there, we then say you have to have a work order. Yeah. And show like we're asking. Yeah.
And say, really, well, the foreman tells me I can get a job. How come you refuse me a job?
Yeah, right.
You know? That's why I pay my union dues. That's why I joined the union, you know, to have a job, and you won't give me a job.
And the union, you see, was doing this in order to preserve the seniority system. You know, giving the jobs to the ones that had them longest.
We had a lot of people working in the union that wouldn't explain a lot of things.
We learned. I hope. So, this was another thing that they tried, and we were able to put in some organizing in the Delano area in 1971. Well, that was at the time when the clinic was just about to be open. But Caesar wanted a vote to be taken among the workers as to whether or not they wanted the clinic. And after they found out what it was, so we had the material, you know, all printed up or mimeographed or whatever. We got it out to the workers, and we went around ranch by ranch and got the workers out of the field and had them vote. And we set up an election committee of three people for each crew on each ranch. And that was about 30 ranches. So that what we wound up with was a crew committee, because they continued to be active as a crew committee after the election was over. So when anything happened, any abuse of the workers within any of the crews came up, then this crew committee, together with the organizer, the union organizer, would go and face the grower, the superintendent, or whatever, and start fighting the grievance. They'd never had that kind of enforcement before. So for the first time then, the workers in the Delano area, at least, began to get some of the service that they should have been getting all during the past year, you see, since the contracts were signed, but which they couldn't get because we didn't have the manpower. There were only four organizers that we had, and you could really only say two if you want to be accurate about it. And so what could they do? Well, then we got about 18 more organizers over through, and so we did have enough there for quite a while. First under Richard and then under Frank Ortiz to do get in some good organizing there. And From what I picked up during the strike that followed, the Delano workers held more solidly than the workers in other parts. Held in. Yeah.
Some arrangement never did really, I could say, in the contract never really got to. It was the bigger arrangement.
Great. So, because they had failed to stop the union out on a boycott, because they failed to stop it at the legislative level, because they had failed to stop it out on the ranches by trying to sabotage the contract, the growers were finally forced into the position of dealing with the Teamsters rather than continuing to deal with the United Farm Workers. And the main reason for this was that they just couldn't stand the idea of having the workers in charge of their own lives. They wanted to be in charge of the workers, lock, stock, and barrel. They wanted the old days of the ranch nation to come back again so that they could do whatever they wanted to with the workers. And so they knew that, as Ron Taylor said, the growers had a problem. That was control of the workers. And the Teamsters offered their services to help the growers solve the problem. Because under the Teamsters, the workers don't get, they don't have any power. The Teamsters are not trying to reinforce those contracts in any way. Here, once in a while, they read some great thing about how they help some guy get workers' compensation or something like that that they could have gotten, you know, without the help of the Teamsters. Or little things, you know. But as far as really getting the workers out from under the feet of the growers, the Teamsters are very happy to just keep them right there. They want the workers, they for the same reason, they want those workers to be under tight control too. They don't want to strike. They're afraid, you know, if workers start striking all over the place out in the field, it might affect the cannery workers or the truck drivers or something. Or at least that's what they claim. However, we'll get to that later. So, 1973, as you know, when the contracts came up for renewal, the growers refused to bargain in good faith, and naturally they would because they'd already made up their minds to deal with the Teamsters instead of with us. And so they signed with the Teamsters. And then the workers went on strike. And we resumed the boycott against Table Grapes in 1973. And this begins the last part of the House meeting outline. This is the bloody summer of 73. And with the help that the union got from the AFL-CIO to the tune of around $1.5 million for strike benefits, the union for the first time was in a position to do something in terms of actually keeping the workers out of the fields once they got them, because they had money for strike benefits. And the only problem was, the major problem was, that the Teamsters had more money, as could have been predicted. And they put that money into hiring thugs, goons, at the rate of $67.50 a day to come down and disrupt the strike and beat the hell out of the strikers and send them to the hospital and so forth. And so that before the strike was over, over 17 of them had been shot, over 200 of them had been, pickets had been sent to the hospital. Nearly 4,000 of them had been jailed, including a large number of priests and nuns and ministers. And of course, two of them, Juan de la Cruz and Najee Bacula, were murdered. Juan de la Cruz by a shot from a Teamster gun, and Najee by a policeman's flashlight, smashed his skull. So with that, the union decided that they just could not stay out on that strike any longer, and they sent most of the strikers, a large number of 600 strikers, went out on a boycott. They reopened the Great Boycott and sent about 600 strikers all over the country. That just about brings us up to present time. The boycott operations have been expanded all over the country and tightened up during the last year. There are many, many more people that have been involved. House meeting operations have been put into effect in practically every part of the country except Florida and Texas. And I may be going to Florida after I'm through here, Mac Lyons has written and wants me to come back there. So the prices of the grapes and the lettuce have been forced down. The sales of lettuce, grapes, and gala wines have been forced down all over the country. So things are looking an awful lot better than they did just about a year ago. A year ago, we started out the house meeting, the very beginning, by getting right into what we call the worst emergency in the history of the United Farm Workers. That's how we started, on that note. And that's how we wound it up. Well, we don't start it that way now. Because there's no use in coming on as a loser. Because, well, it's clear that we aren't. We're winning. And so we want to give the people hope. Well, we were giving them hope at the same time as we were making it real serious, out in those house meetings out all through the country. But now we can temper the emergency nature of the thing, and we still need the help of the people to push the boycott, the gala boycott, over. We can talk more in terms of just needing a little more hope, a little more pressure from the people, a little more action and participation on the part of the people to push the gala over the brink. Then, of course, as much as, or probably more than I do, about the situation with these other strikes. Probably we can get Al Rojas, he'll be here tomorrow, to tell about the strikes up there. And about the lemon strike, which is still going on. I don't know what the current, does anybody know the current situation regarding lemon strike?
They still haven't come around at all about the elections.
But the strike was on.
Ranchers aren't, they stopped picking on Saturdays and Sundays. They used to have until 2 weeks ago. They used to pick 7 days a week. And now they're not. They stopped Saturdays and Sundays.
Because of all the people that go to the picket line, or what?
Because they can't get enough workers to do it. It's just not worth it to work for 7 days.
How much longer will those lemons last on the trees?
Not too good.
Pardon?
This is the last week of January.
Yeah. Well,
the trees are still breaking. I mean, all along, those trees are still breaking. There's a lot of lemons still on the trees.
But I understand that last week, Manning was Governor Castro.
There's no lock on there. They had a meeting with Castro, but nothing that
he said. So,
yeah,
Do you have any more questions? Have any questions about this material that we've been covering? We're through with the history.
When you're talking, you don't spend a hell of a lot of time about the history, but just getting over.
This is the easy. It's the four-part house meeting.
Yeah, right.
What's the thing?
Wait a minute. I want to find out. What's your question?
I just asked you that. Right? You don't spend a lot of time on the history of they just jumping around and hitting.
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't spend more than. I would say 15 minutes on the first. See, the first part shouldn't take you more than 10 minutes, or 15 on the outside. See, that goes through the early history. Okay. Then the next part is the founding of the farm workers to the Chavez and so forth. That shouldn't take more than another 15 minutes. But you're not going to go into each one of those points. And those that you do go into, you're not going to go into deeply like we did here, fairly deeply. The next one is the growers fight back, and that's what we've been talking about more recently. That's beginning with the lettuce strike and how they tried to destroy the union, and then the final ripoff for the great contracts. And that shouldn't take more than 15 minutes.
So this one's about 15 minutes and 20 minutes.
Yeah. Then the last one, actually the last one can take a little longer for the reason that the last one will also include your hustle. When you're laying it on, you know, trying to get something out of them, trying to get them, each one of them, to hold a house meeting or to become active in our picketing or going from house to house. Explaining about our new programs in the Poor People's Union and money, and also the last thing is trying to find staff, trying to find some more volunteer full-time staff. Because as I've said before, if we don't get two or three times as much staff as we've got right now, we're not going to be able to do a good organizing job.
We were talking about that.
Yeah.
What's the average length of a house meeting?
About an hour and a half.
An hour and a half.
So I was telling you the question that
That includes the questions. Sometimes, some of them last a lot longer than that. They just want to go on and on.
Talking, questioning, they'll bring in the coffee, and so forth. As long as they just bring coffee, that's fine. You're warned not to bring any.
Oh, that's great. Stay as long as you can.
So there's no actual limit to it?
No. No, there isn't. The main reason for that is...
Just remember that you don't have another house meeting.
Huh?
Just remember that you don't have another house meeting. Some other places can take care of the wheels.
Yeah. You see, the longer you...